Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. There are lots of other NPR podcasts we think you would enjoy. For word games, puzzles, and trivia of all sorts, check out Ask Me Another. It's a rambunctious hour that blends brain teasers with comedy and music. Find Ask Me Another on iTunes under podcasts. And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, as Marvel prepares to unleash the latest tale of Thor and his complicated family, we'll jump into a family relationship that stretches far, far back in mythology and reality, the world of brothers and sisters. We'll take a moment to anticipate the joyfully goofy television that comes around at this time of year with a blisteringly difficult quiz. And as always, we'll close with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And we are incredibly happy, as we always are, when we have this opportunity to be joined by the lovely Kat Chow. Kat Chow, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and social media producer for Code Switch.
Kat is always fun to follow on Code Switch. You also run the Today in 1963.
Yes, I do.
Twitter feed, which is always a hoot, especially when I don't notice that that's the tweet I'm reading.
And you're thinking that this happened today.
Yeah, and I'm suddenly sitting there thinking, wow, that seems like it would have happened a long time ago.
Yeah. But we haven't come as far as I thought we had.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting month. Later this month is the anniversary of JFK's death, so
indeed,
it'll be particularly busy.
Indeed. So that is Today in 1963, and I just wanted to start off by pimping one of Kat's projects.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for having me on.
And that is it. We are always happy to see you, ma'am. And so this is the week that Marvel is going to be releasing Thor, the, what's it called there, Glenn?
The Dark World.
The Dark World.
I always want to call it Thor, the Lost World.
Yeah, I always want to call it Thor, the Legend of the Lost Ark, which I know is not a thing for any way. So it's the Dark World.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably we are still dealing with Thor and his problematic brother, Loki, who you may remember from the first Thor or from a little movie called The Avengers,
right?
In which he had a very entertaining fistfight.
Right.
We all remember.
Plot schmott, I have it on good authority that there is more shirtlessness in this film than there was in the previous installment, so...
Yeah. Well, I did say at the time that we reviewed Thor originally, for me, it only worked for me when it was on Earth with Kat Dennings and those folks. So I don't know. This seems like it's very Thor heavy.
I think this is very Asgardian.
I would think that Thor, the Dark World, might be heavy on Thor. I had actually thought the peg for this was the recent breakup of the Jonas Brothers, so I'm very confused by all this talk with Thor.
Yeah, well, I had asked on Twitter whether there really is such a thing as breaking up with a band that's you and your two brothers. Like, is that a thing? And everyone seemed to think it was.
Mm-hmm. I think it can be. I think you certainly are breaking up your musical group. And while I don't think there's any great acrimony in the Jonas Brothers, I certainly have a list here of bands that have been broken apart by deep, deep animosity between siblings.
Yeah, well, we just figured, we've talked about moms, we've talked about dads in pop culture, but I don't think we've ever talked about brothers and sisters. So we figured that Thor versus Thor's brother, and also...
alternate title.
And also the breakdown of the Jonas Brothers, that these made for as good a time as any. Now, I think before we do this, we should go around and we'll explain our own situation vis-a-vis siblings, because that might change the way you see
it. Yeah, I do think that how you perceive sibling relationships in popular culture is really hugely affected by your own sibling relationships.
Yeah.
I'll just say at the outset that I am the younger of two sons. My older brother is 6 years older than I am, so we didn't really hang out much when we were kids, and we were very different. He was into sports and skateboarding and skiing and beating the crap out of me.
And did you fight back?
I was not involved in the beating the crap out of me. I was into rules and their strict strict obedience. So it was basically like growing up with the goldfish from Cat in the Hat.
Tell that top-hatted cat he should not be about. He should not be here when your mother is out.
Just wanted to... so I can understand why some of the beating happened.
Oh, wow.
But for that reason, novels and movies that are really based on the intensity of the sibling bond, that use that as their energy, always kind of got lost on me. I just never quite got it. But let's continue.
Because you didn't hang out. Catch up.
Yeah, I have two older sisters who are 7 and 9 years older than me. And growing up, you know, they didn't beat me up, fortunately, but I always got the ugly Ken dolls whenever we played Barbie. Like, my Barbies always had the ones who were, you know, from the dollar store. The one that they always made me play with, his name was Richard, and he was, like, really nerdy, and I always cried. And, I mean, sort of, like, foreshadowing for dating life now. but, no, anyway, I love my older sisters now, and, I mean, I did back then, but now we're much closer now that I'm approaching adult life.
So we both got kind of a taste of only childism.
Yeah,
I guess.
Exactly.
Sort of a taste. And I wish I could provide more diversity, but I'm in roughly the exact same situation. I have one older sister. She's 5 years older than me. And we did play together a lot. Mostly, I wouldn't say she beat me up the way your brother did, Glenn, but she did torment me into the point where I had like a facial tic, like I licked my lips obsessively because my sister badgered me so mercilessly. It was just a lot of pick, 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 pick. And I mean, I'm sure that it has had no impact on my life.
No, absolutely not.
She's a very nice person.
My sister is awesome. My sister and I are very, very close now, and she's the absolute best.
But she stopped harassing.
She was a terrible teenager, though. She was the meanest teenager.
Yeah. Well, I have one older sister also. We're all the youngest.
What does that say?
We're all
youngest. I feel like that says something.
Yeah, four babies around the table.
Four attention-starved babies.
My sister is almost three years older than I am, and we were recently talking about, she was sort of saying, I know we fought because we have to have fought. Because we were talking about, she has two boys, and we were talking about the relationship that we had and the relationship that they have. And she was saying, I know we fought, we have to have fought. And I know we must have fought, but we were really very close. And by the time we were in high school, I mostly just idolized her and wanted to be exactly like her. And was never going to be. She's a much more kind of chill, calm person than I am.
Oh, yeah. My sister was way cooler than me and still is.
Yeah. I just idolized her and adored her. So
when I would read a novel like The Sound and the Fury, for example, which is about the Compton family and the really close relationship, the kind of weird relationship between Caddy and Quentin, or a heartbreaking work of staggering genius, David Eggers' book about having to take over and be both a father and an older brother to his a much younger brother. Mm-hmm. And I just reread Franny and Zoe recently, J.D. Salinger's Franny and Zoe, which shares a lot of psychic real estate with Wes Anderson's The Royal Tenenbaums.
Right.
Mm-hmm, basically just film that book, essentially. The Corrections, The Hotel New Hampshire, all these books, the energy from it comes from the sibling bond, and I just always felt like on the outside looking in, like I didn't understand it. Recently, I did read a book by a friend of mine, Chris Adrian, Gob's Grief, his first novel, is about these two brothers, one of whom gets killed in the Civil War. And the grief that the other brother has is just so overwhelming, and he's such a good writer that I actually, for the first time, feel like I got it. I got that crucial connection in a way that I never actually experienced in life.
Wow, that's great.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Stephen, you were saying that you were going about this partly from a band perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down a big list. I mean, it's amazingly common that bands throughout the history of popular music have had siblings in them, in part because they so often started playing when they were kids in the garage, and, you know, early versions of these bands would form in high school with, you know, brothers, or Ann and Nancy Wilson, or the Jackson 5, and Hanson, and the Isley Brothers. And
Osmonds.
The Osmonds. And so a couple of things that I found interesting that I wanted to touch on. One is the notion of the feuding siblings and the siblings that throughout their lives maintain that bond of tension.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes,
like, competitiveness or
competitiveness and outright awfulness.
Okay.
The way that siblings can be awful to each other. So the first band that sprung immediately to my mind was Oasis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where you have Liam and Noel Gallagher, who just were at each other's throats until the band imploded because they just didn't get along. I mean, there's certainly tension within the Kinks. You know, you have some of these bands where that's probably part of it. I think having some competitiveness within a band, especially when you have multiple songwriters, can lead to great work. And as an extension of that, I was thinking about, you have these families where there is a dominant sibling. There is a vastly most successful sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else is a satellite rotating around a Michael Jackson. You know, if you're Tito Jackson, you are never going to be anything other than T. Tito Jackson.
Well, in the popular imagination. I mean, in your life, you will be.
Right. But you know, your Baldwin brothers, where there's this natural settling out of most successful to least successful that has really stayed consistent throughout their lives. And I'm sure that an Alec Baldwin versus a Daniel Baldwin, you know, is something that, you know, while they are still siblings who love each other, you have that natural tension between them.
Yeah.
John and Jim Belushi.
Right. Yeah,
you have Jim Belushi, who has spent the 3 decades since his brother's death kind of drifting along in his brother's shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's a lot easier to have a very long shadow and you die very young.
Right.
Because particularly when you are overshadowed by the not just a sibling, but the legacy of a sibling.
Right.
And I imagine it must be so difficult to be in the same field as your sibling. I mean, in so many stories or arcs that we see, you always see the rebellious younger sibling kind of branching off and doing something different.
And but yet you also see it particularly with entertainers. My sibling is a singer, you know, so I should be a singer too. You know, Ashley Simpson versus Jessica Simpson.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You know, but you also, you know, every once in a while, I always think it's interesting when there is an unlikely split with people who are still creative but not in the same field, looking at the brothers Penn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sean Penn and Christopher Penn were actors, and then Michael Penn is a fantastic singer-songwriter who never bothered with acting.
Yeah. In addition to the people who are sort of real-life siblings, I was thinking, too, about the way siblings tend to be drawn out in fiction, because there's such a trope of the feuding siblings, but then underlying it, you circle back to this kind of, but in the end, everyone sits around and makes up. And
there's this tenderness. Or
sits around the, right, sits around the breakfast table. And there are certain ones where I have wound up really liking the fact that that reconciliation either never comes or is enormously elusive. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Georgia, which is a film that stars Jennifer Jason Leigh as this really troubled, difficult singer, but kind of really talented. And Mayor Winningham as her sister, who has always kind of been stuck taking care of her because she's such a mess all the time. And it's kind of this caretaker versus crazy person idea, but there's not that underlying sense that in the end it's all fine.
Sure,
it's not fine. They're both in their own ways kind of made miserable by this dynamic. That's kind of the drama side.
And Blue Jasmine falls into that category somewhat as well.
It does. And here's two films that you will not hear talked about together very much. One is Georgia. The other one is While You Were Sleeping. a film that everyone knows that I love, if they know me at all. And in this movie, you have, you know, a fairly typical story of, like, the girl who's interested in the one brother, and then it turns out she likes the other brother. But the first brother that she's interested in, who is this kind of rich D-bag played by Peter Gallagher, is that same rich doof the entire way through. Like, they never rescue him. They never say, like, oh, and in the end, he's a really good guy. In the very end of it, you just still would not want anything to do with that guy because he's just a kind of a punk, even though he comes from this really super nice family that she's becoming friends with and all this stuff. So I always like it when they're not afraid to say, you know, very often there is some reconciliation, but sometimes there's not. And sometimes you have to kind of free yourself from waiting around for that.
I mean, Trey is shaking his iPod right now, wanting to talk about Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Right.
You know, in which Joan Crawford and Betty Davis are chewing scenery and spitting it at each other.
He also would have gone for King Lear, I think.
Yeah.
A lot about King Lear from him, too.
I think he would have had several ideas.
And it's easy to make it something about the conflict between brothers, but it's also like sometimes it's not conflict, it's just you guys are so different. Sure. And you were in this situation of a family where like these are just people you are with.
Right.
So the one show that I really think nailed it is 6 Feet Under.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of my brother and my relationship in the relationship between Nate and David. I was clearly David. And because it's not about not liking each other and even not loving each other, it's just, you know, you're very different people and you wouldn't necessarily hang out. I used to think of myself as the Michael Bluth of my family, the calm, centered one, while all craziness happened around me. But the older I get, the more it is clear that I am and have always been the buster. Because my family is very normal. It's a very normal family.
I'm so glad that someone brought up Arrested Development. I think that's the perfect template for all the weird sibling dynamics. I mean, like Lindsay versus Michael. And
well, and you have a peacemaker caretaker. It, you know, the more siblings you have, you know, when you talk to people who are one of four, you know, there is usually the grown-up of, of the four who winds up, you know, taking charge.
Care
and
of them,
and that is absolutely Michael Bluth. And that person usually winds up getting a superiority complex about it, like Michael Bluth.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think is interesting is that for television especially, it's very common to show a lot of younger sibling relationships, especially in comedies. You have
like
lots
Malcolm in the Middle.
Like Malcolm in the Middle and Modern Family and
the Middle
and The Simpsons and all these. That's pretty common. With adult siblings, with the exception of kind of sprawling family shows like Parenthood and Brothers and Sisters, a lot of where you actually see sibling-like relationships are in workplace shows because the workplace sitcom is the new family sitcom.
Sure.
Yeah, it is.
Because they may choose to work there, but you don't necessarily choose the people you're butting up against.
Right.
And it's very intimate relationship.
So and people become like, it's very common now, you know, you see these shows like, and I realize I mention this all the time, but, you know, a show like Sports Night that has like a clear patriarch and then, you know, a bunch of siblings, sometimes they're squabbling and it feels very family-like. And I think so do a lot of other workplace comedies. I think there was some of that in The Office. I think there was some of that in parts of 30 Rock. The whole sense of 30 Rock is kind of the distant father and the and the kids trying to both kind of evade him and also earn his approval. And so I think some of those, what would really feel to me like brother-sister relationships are really played out in workplace shows.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they sort of emulate that family structure. So I actually finished this past week reading a book called Forgotten Country by a writer named Catherine Chung. And I haven't read a book in a really long time that made me wonder which sibling or which character to be more frustrated with. So this book, it talks about this woman named Hannah who just disappears from her family, and her older sister is sent to go find her. And that's actually not the whole premise of the book. It's about like the family troubles, the father has cancer, but I just didn't know which character who I thought was more selfish, which sibling. The older sister was selfish in her own right. So was the younger sister. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at relationships like that, it's always, I think, my favorite sibling ones in pop culture are when the roles almost become reversed, where you see the younger sibling just totally losing it or totally owning it and taking care of the older one.
Mm-hmm. It is very easy to fall into kind of those cliches about the, you know, the pop culture family is like the older sibling who's smart and successful, the middle sibling who feels ignored by everyone.
Yeah.
The
and
jam.
Then it
the jam.
And then the young sibling who's like the rebel and the kind of the crazy one.
Well, let me bring it back to Marvel because the Marvel Age started with the Fantastic Four because Stan Lee and Jack Kirby wanted a family dynamic because they knew conflict. The family is a good source of conflict. So you have Sue Storm and Johnny Storm, who are actually brother and sister. You as you mentioned, you have Loki and Thor. You have North Star and Aurora and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. DC, interestingly enough, a lot of only children. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, only children.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's state that Aquaman does have a brother, Orm, who of course is the evil Ocean Master, yes. But when it comes to famous sibling pairs of superheroes, you only got one choice, and that is this.
We've got to stay awake, Jaina. Wonder Twin Powers activate! Form of an ice unicycle.
See, right there.
Come on, Jaina.
That is, of course, Zan and Jaina.
An ice unicycle.
Yeah. That's Zan and Jaina from the Super Friends. They replaced Wendy and Marvin. And, of course, she had the power to assume any shape of an animal, and he had the power to assume any form of water, ice, or steam. That's how they cheated a lot.
Yeah,
It's like an ice unicycle.
An ice internal combustion engine. You know, anything.
An ice unicycle.
But that's it. I mean, those are the seminal sibling superheroes, Zan and Jaina.
Yeah, it's true. The Wonder Twins are, I hadn't thought about them in a long time, but I watched them on Super Friends. Certainly. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you should come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org/PCHH and talk to us about your favorite sibling relationships,
your favorite brothers and sisters.
We did barely scratch the surface.
I mean, directing teams, your Zuckers, your Wachowskis, your Cones.
Absolutely. I'm sure that there are countless examples of brothers and sisters.
The Bee Gees. Wait, I'm sorry.
No.
It takes all kinds, Tom. It takes all kinds. But I'm very excited about our next segment because I love a quiz.
Oh, boy.
I love a quiz.
When you're shuffling papers and the rest of us can't,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know we're in for a quiz.
It's making me squirm.
Oh, yeah. No, around this time last year, we did a quiz that was about upcoming holiday television. Your Hallmark movies, your Lifetime movies, and that's most of what this is. because I was watching some of my screeners of such movies this weekend, and I was also looking ahead to some of the other ones that are to come. And so we're going to talk about upcoming holiday television.
Uh-huh. All right.
Are we all ready?
Okay.
All right. Stephen Thompson, yes. In the Lifetime original movie, The 12 Trees of Christmas, the children's librarian meets a heartless businessman. Mm-hmm. He says to her, I work for Charles Harris. Her line is, A, Charles Harris, lawsuit happy shark Charles Harris? B, Charles Harris, destroyer of the environment Charles Harris? C, Charles Harris, slimy talk show host Charles Harris? Or D, Charles Harris, heartless developer Charles Harris? It is one of those.
Okay. I'm thinking it is that Charles Harris is bent on wrecking the library, tearing down the library to build condos. I'm going to go with heartless developer. Yes!
You are right, Stephen Thompson. Not only that, but he exactly wants to build condos on the site of the existing library.
I am so glad to have this to fall back on.
You are amazing. So, of course, the children's librarian does the only thing you can do to save the library. She organizes a Christmas tree decorating contest.
Sure.
Of course she does. I watched this entire movie, by the way. Kat Chow. In the sci-fi movie Bering Sea Beast, the star of Sharknado teams up to fight, quote, a colony of blood-sucking amphibious predators, they have put in parentheses, sea vampires.
Oh, wow.
End quote. With what actor? A, Jonathan Lipnicki from Jerry Maguire. B, Jeremy Miller from Growing Pains. He was the youngest son on Growing Pains.
Okay.
I have to explain these things to you.
I know. I mean, now I'm just going to be guessing.
C, Tina Yothers from Family Ties. She was the youngest one of Family Ties. D, Allison Porter from Curly Sue. She played Curly Sue in Curly Sue.
Wow. I'm going to go with A, whatever.
Jonathan Lipnicki was A.
You're right.
Wow.
You are absolutely right. It is Jonathan Lipnicki from Jerry Maguire will be in Bering Sea Beast. Glenn Weldon.
Mm.
In the Hallmark movie Snow Bride,
sure.
He's a young member of a famous political family. She's a consultant brought in to brandish his image before he runs for Congress. B, the candidate running against his slicker, handsomer brother. C, the gossip columnist trying for the big story as her print publication goes web only. D, the housekeeper's daughter who is accidentally mistaken for his girlfriend.
This is tough. See, I figured there would be some kind of clue in the snow thing, but the Snow Bride is really just about the time of the year, isn't it?
No, the Snow Bride is because she shows up in the snow in a wedding dress.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go with D.
It's actually the gossip columnist trying for the big story.
I knew it was that one.
As her print publication
there
goes web
only. There were a lot of details in that one, but with Holmes' brain, that doesn't
always do it.
Too many
details. That's
why
I didn't
There's actually a moment where her boss is like, we're going to go web only. And she's like Newsweek did. So somebody has done their research. Stephen.
Yes.
Another Hallmark movie involves an international singing sensation, that's in quotes, played by Shannon Elizabeth of American Pie, who gets a second chance at first love. Is it called A, That's Snow Business, B, A Christmas Note, C, Catch a Christmas Star, or D, Ding Dong Merrily?
Oh, my God.
That's Snow Business, A Christmas Note, Catch a Christmas Star, Ding Dong Merrily.
I'm going to go with Christmas Note.
It is Catch a Christmas Star.
Oh, I knew it.
Yeah, I did not. I just had no...
Got to go for the
it's
cheesiest
It's just so
one.
Cheesy and romantic. Yeah.
Terribly sorry.
Yeah, I've failed.
Kat Chow. Esquire, the new network for fellas, will soon debut a show about men's personal style.
We really are underserved.
All right. Will soon debut a show about men's personal style, co-executive produced by Ryan Seacrest Productions. It's called A, this is my jam. B, bro salad.
Oh.
C, how I rock it. Oh. D, get some.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
what? Wait, hold on. What's worse, bro salad or get some? I don't know. I don't know which one I would flip
channels
through faster.
This is my jam, bro salad. How I rock it, get some.
They're all guessing.
Probably how I rock it.
It is how I rock it.
Oh, look at you, Cal.
Yeah.
Excellent job.
I didn't even guess this one.
Excellent job.
I just knew.
I knew in my bones.
Yeah.
The way you know about a good melon. Number six, Glenn Weldon. Hallmark, again, the movie Fur Crazy. It's F-I-R, crazy.
I see what you did there.
Is about what? A busy career woman who gets stuck running her family's Christmas tree lot. B, a busy executive who has to find a tree for his boss's family before time runs out. C, a child actor who hides in a tree lot to avoid shooting another season of his wildly popular sitcom. Or D, an environmentalist and an event planner fighting over whether to cut down a town's oldest evergreen.
Okay. Wow. Well, if I went with the too many details thing, it would be, I would definitely go with, I think, D. But I do think that that's actually the easiest one. So I'm going to go with D.
It is A. A busy career woman who gets stuck running her family's Christmas tree lot.
I would have guessed D too, except that it was so similar to the one that I got.
Yeah.
And God knows, these don't follow a formula.
That's right. That's my point. Okay.
Yeah. Number seven, Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
Which of these phrases really appears in the description of a movie starring your favorite and mine, Dean Cain? A, begins to fall for Santa's court-appointed defense attorney. B, begins to fall for one of the taller elves. C, begins to fall for all those reindeer games. Or D, begins to fall for the snowman's grandmother.
Santa's court-appointed attorney.
You're correct.
Ah.
Very good, Stephen Thompson.
It was just twee enough.
Mm-hmm. It's from a movie called Defending Santa, by the way.
Wow.
Cat Chow. In the movie Christmas with Tucker, Tucker is A, a boy, B, a dog, C, a hunky ranch hand, D, a town. Christmas with Tucker.
It's definitely the dog.
It is the dog.
Yes. Wow, Cat Chow, you
three
are like the
three.
You are the Hallmark whisperer.
You're on fire.
This is great.
Glenn Weldon, number nine. Question number nine, Glenn Weldon. This is a real Ion movie description. I don't know if you watch a lot of Ion.
No, I do not. But
Maya, a recently heartbroken pet supply employee, couldn't have any less in common with her coworker Pat. Pat, who happens to be the company founder's son. But tasked with traveling across the country on a Christmas time social media tour for the company's leading canine and most prized possession, Scoots. Fate finds a funny way to intervene. In their race against the clock, the two begin to fall for one another. Pat and Maya, not Scoots.
Right, good.
Unbeknownst to Maya, though, her remorseful ex-boyfriend is in close pursuit, hoping he can win her back. That is a real Ion movie description.
Sure.
That I believe.
Yeah.
Which of the following people does not appear in this film? A, George Hamilton. B, Eve Plum. C, Shelley Long. D, Wink Martindale.
Okay, this is tough. This is tough. Eve Plum, I don't think, is in the same sort of echelon, if we call it that. I'm just going to... you wouldn't name Wink Martindale out of the ether.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Wink Martindale.
No.
I'm going with Eve Plum.
Actually, it is correct that Eve Plum is not in it. Stephen is right. Because Eve Plum is not in it, Susan Olsen is in it. The other Brady girl.
I love the way these movies often have some sort of social media turn to them.
Social media tour.
Or the thing with the thing going web only. It's kind of like, you know when you get those Valentine hearts and they try to inject a little modern zazz and so the heart says like email?
Yeah.
Emoji me.
Oh.
All right, Stephen Thompson. Yes. Question number 10, Stephen Thompson. Kirstie Alley has an upcoming show on TV Land called Kirstie. In it, she will have a one-night stand with a man played by whom? A. Ted Danson. B. Woody Harrelson. C. John Travolta. D. Jason Alexander.
Wow. That's... I gotta think it's who's low enough on the totem pole to appear on a TV Land original series. I'm gonna go with Jason Alexander.
Believe it or not...
Danson?
John Travolta.
What? Oh,
I was going to guess that.
John Travolta.
I wasn't, because I would have figured I would have heard about it.
John Travolta.
I don't know why I thought that, but I did.
They're old.
In the John Travolta newsletter you get. Right.
They're old talking baby friends.
Oh, of course
right.
they are.
That's right.
They're old talking baby friends. And I believe also perhaps members of the same religious organization.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kat Chow. In Holidays... That's Holidays with a Z-E.
Okay.
Hunky, All My Children star and Dancing with the Stars competitor Cameron Matheson plays the childhood sweetheart of a woman who leaves her fast-paced, busy lifestyle to return to her sleepy hometown, where, of course, she runs into her childhood sweetheart.
Is she like a web editor or something? The dying
emoji me. Who plays the woman? A. Jenny Garth of Beverly Hills 90210. Catch out. B. Kelly Martin of Life Goes On, and then a lot of Hallmark movies. C, Jenny McCarthy. D, someone you've never heard of who is apparently on the Carrie Diaries.
See, I like these asides because I feel like I'm getting special help from the teacher.
And I figure I have to at least tell you who these people are.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, I'm still going to
get... No pressure, Kat, but you're 3 for 3.
I was going to say, you've got to get this right.
I would say Jenny Martin.
That wasn't one of the choices.
I like that it's basically just...
Kat
just,
has her head on the table.
They sound like just named together, randomly picked from the air.
Jenny Garth, Kelly Martin, Jenny McCarthy, Carrie Diaries person.
Okay, this is me dying inside. I'm going to say Kelly Martin.
It is actually Jenny Garth. You were so close.
You were half right before.
You had half a piece of it. Yeah.
And here's the thing. The reason why this is a trick question is that Cameron Matheson is also in a different Hallmark movie with Kelly Martin, in which she plays a recently widowed owner of a bicycle shop who secretly wants to become a professional cookie baker.
The number of proprietresses in these movies.
This one is currently running her late husband's bicycle shop, but she really wants to bake cookies because everyone in these movies wants to bake cookies for a living.
Okay.
All right, Glenn Weldon, final question.
Going to get one right.
Question
one.
Number 12.
One of them.
Glenn Weldon. There is an actual Hallmark movie called Hats Off to Christmas.
Oh.
It is called this because, A, the hero has a young son who longs for a special cowboy hat from Santa. B, the town where it takes place is called Hats, Nebraska. C, the heroine works at a Santa hat factory. D, the central conflict is over whether a new Christmas-themed restaurant will allow customers to wear hats during dinner.
Oy, oy, oy. They all sound terrible and not... But
and plausible.
So I'm going to eliminate the proprietress one because we've had so many proprietress ones. What was the first one again?
Hero has a young son who longs for a special cowboy hat for Christmas.
I'm not buying Hats, Nebraska.
Yeah,
that sounds like a Holmesy...
Yeah, I'm going... Even though it sounds the most sort of formulaic, I'm going to go with A.
Oh, in spite of that.
Yeah.
You're going to go with the young son who longs for a special cowboy hat for Christmas.
I am.
No, it's that the heroine works at a Santa hat factory.
Oh, wow.
That is true. That is true. You all did wonderfully.
No. In fact, no.
Kat Chow is our winner.
Kat Chow is
our winner.
And I answered an answer that didn't even exist. You know?
You actually got 3.5.
Yeah.
Kat made up her own answers, which is always always approved on the quiz. So that's some of what's out there in holiday films.
So what
I watched this weekend, by the way, Snow Bride and 12 Trees of Christmas, which is the one with the librarian and the decorating contest.
Yeah.
The one with Kelly Martin where she has the bike shop.
So which one's best?
You know, actually, Snow Bride is quite charming, believe it or not.
I feel
where
like...
she's the gossip columnist and he's the young politician.
Yeah, I feel like the librarian one would be...
just kind of quietly shaking his head over here.
No. So what networks are we talking about here? We're talking about Ion, Hallmark.
Some of them are Ion, some of them are Hallmark, some of them are Lifetime.
Okay.
That's most... And then,
so Glenn's
going
to go find these and watch them later.
And then we threw in a couple sci-fi there, too. But, you know. All right. And that brings us to our final segment. What, other than the upcoming siege of holiday movies is making us happy this week. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, sir?
Last week, in a 48-hour stretch, I got to see two of my favorite performers in unusual work-related settings, and both of them were delightful. One, I got to sit in on a panel discussion for an All Songs Considered live listening party, where Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton from All Songs Considered preside over a little panel. And it was me, my friend Katie Presley, who works for Bitch Media, and a singer and rapper by the name of Dessa. And Dessa, you know, performed at the end of this. It was absolutely delightful. I want to just wholeheartedly recommend Dessa's music. She put out a great record this year called Parts of Speech. Let's actually hear a little bit of the song Fighting Fish. I want to try, I want to risk, and I don't want to walk, rather swing and miss. I'm not above apologies, but I don't ask permission. Got a lot of imperfections, but I don't care my ambition in them. So that's Dessa, who has put out one of my favorite records of the year, and getting to hang out and sit on a panel was really, really cool. And if you haven't heard Dessa's music, she's great. The other one, which you can watch, was a Halloween-themed live Tiny Desk concert, which we have archived on the NPR site, with Nico Case and her band performing in costume. Mm-hmm. If you have ever wanted to see Nico Case perform in what she calls, quote, a sexy gorilla suit.
It was awesome.
I highly recommend it. Kelly Hogan, who sings in her band, was as some sort of zombie farmer. Eric Bachman from Archers of Loaf and Crooked Fingers was just in her band as Dracula. And it's just delightfully charming. We have praised Nico Case several times on this show, but her album with a very long title is another one of my favorite records of the year. So two of the people who put out two of my favorite albums of the year got to see within the last week. And if you don't know their music, please check it out.
Fantastic. Thank you, Stephen Thompson. Kat Chow, what is making you happy this week, miss?
What's making me happy this week is being able to read that awesome book that I mentioned, Forgotten Country. It came out in 2012, and it's by Catherine Cheung. And she just paints this really fantastic portrait of a family that is so broken. And when I say broken, I mean they're broken in the way that every family goes through it. I mean, I know so many families who have lost someone to cancer. My own mother died from cancer when I was young. And so there was a similar narrative to this. And I kind of mentioned before the dynamic between siblings. And it was beautifully written. Catherine Cheung has a background in math. And so that sort of transfers to her prose. And so I really recommend giving it a read. And then also, another thing that's making me happy this week is how nice people have been to me on Twitter recently. My childhood cat died last week, which is a sad thing. But he was old. He was 15, and he had a good life. But so Linda Holmes and I had many conversations about this cat, and also my family, because it wasn't just about my cat.
And to a lesser extent, my family.
And my family. But then also, I tweeted about this. I had such a great response on Twitter, and so it was nice because the internet, for a brief moment, felt validating. But now I wonder if people are going to just continue the whole yelling thing.
But people can be very, very kind and understanding in certain circumstances, and really helpful. Like the kind words of strangers are often just as surprisingly effective as the nasty words of strangers can be. So I'm with you there.
So it was pleasantly surprising. That's actually definitely what made me happy this week.
Yeah. Cool. Well, excellent. Wonderful, Kat. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I love the B-52s, and here's why. They are asking the tough questions, the penetrating, insightful questions of this, our modern era. Now, it's usually Fred Schneider, the band's lead singer, who asks those questions. Back on the album Bouncing Off the Satellites, he famously asked, of course, "What's that on your head?" Turned out to be a wig. Wig is the answer to that question. On the album Cosmic Thing, of course, he asked, "Where's my umbrella?" In the song...
I just wanted this to be the whole show.
In the song Channel Z. And then, of course, most famously, in Love Shack, he asks, "You're what?" I can't do it. I can't actually get up there.
I love these voices.
Being close. Goosed.
This is all by way of preamble. Fred Schneider is on Twitter.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, if you can read through Fred Schneider's Twitter feed and not do it in a, in your boomingest Fred Schneider voice until your dog hides underneath the couch, then I don't know what you're doing, but don't call it living. Because it's awesome. Ask me for an example.
Glenn, could you give us an example?
Damn it, Amy, your pot pies are addictive.
Can you do another?
These are sunflowers that grew from seed. It's just impossible not to. I defy you. He is at Fred Schneider 3 for some reason.
Number 3?
Number 3.
Fred Schneider 1 and 2 are both fake.
Go and find, go and find him. It's fun.
That is so awesome. Every show that brings a new Glenn voice, I feel that those are the ones that, that I would put in our time capsule. Mm. So thank you, buddy.
Sure.
Well, going off of what Kat said, I did want to mention my friend Mo Ryan, who writes about television at the Huffington Post and used to write at the Chicago Tribune and some other places. Mo wrote a piece this week about some very difficult family stuff that she's been going through. Her parents both have health issues and things like that. And it's just a really beautiful, stunning, honest piece of writing. And she had, I think, kind of the same experience that Kat had, that there was just this really, really lovely, like, if you wanted to see how many people love Mo, like, just the number of people who were just saying, like, oh, I'm thinking about you, and thank you for writing this. And it's just a, it's a really, really fine piece of writing. And we'll link to it, and I recommend that you read it, because it's enormously honest, and I think really helpful for people who are going through, you know, difficult things with family and stuff like that.
I think it's really worth keeping in mind how loudly we hear negative voices on the internet and how few those people actually are compared to the number of good people.
I was thinking about that this week with Kat as well. So so that's one thing. I also wanted to mention two actual cultural things making me happy this week, one of which is I have been listening to a lot of songs of playlists.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I never became a Pandora person, and I was talking to one of my friends about this week, but you know, Pandora has that way of kind of being like, here, play me 50 songs that are exactly like this song. Mm-hmm. Songza is playlist-oriented.
And mood-oriented.
It's mood-oriented, but it's like they're themed a little bit more. For example, I was walking on the treadmill in my new building, and I was listening to this, like, they basically have it themed around, like, uplifting pop. So it's like pop that is encouraging to you. It's specifically branded as a workout mix, but they, you know, you could also listen to it for just like any old crummy day. And so you get a lot of like those Katy Perry songs and stuff like that. And it was really cool. And then I saw that there was a workout mix called Girl Hold My Earrings, which I thought was really, really fun, which is female rappers. And I was like, that is so awesome that there's a list of female rappers. I will admit that it plays into a bit of a stereotype to call that Girl Hold My Earrings, but it made me laugh so much, and it just seemed so, like, I loved it.
Songs is terrific. It's a very clean, easy interface, too.
Yeah.
So it's Songza, S-O-N-G-Z-A.
Correct. The other thing is, the day that this podcast drops on Friday, you will be able to get on demand the season finale of MasterChef Junior, which I did not start watching until I realized that everyone I knew was talking about it every single week and how much they loved it. And so I started watching MasterChef Junior, which is a cooking competition, another Gordon Ramsay cooking competition, but this is with kids. And it's like startlingly charming. First of all, it really is like, you know, you'll have like a 10-year-old who's producing like, oh, he took this chicken breast and pounded it out and wrapped it around goat cheese and herbs and then put prosciutto around it and cooked the whole thing. And you just, they are really, really impressive what these kids know how to do. But they also have some of these really simple challenges that are, that would be vexing even to an adult chef. They tasked them at one point with making a perfect soft-boiled egg, and they didn't have a timer, so they had to, like, count in their head for how long they thought that it should be. And so they, and then there's this incredibly tense moment where they're opening these soft-boiled eggs to see whether they're right. It's kind of shockingly great.
And I'm guessing that Gordon Ramsay is not calling them donkeys.
He does not call them
names. Yeah, I was actually going to ask about
that. He's incredibly supportive and kind, and you can tell he feels enormous affection for them. And it, the only bad thing about it from his perspective is it kind of makes his yelling at people look like complete shtick because, you know.
Right. It's interesting that you're taking away the big part of the Gordon Ramsay brand, and it's still a good show.
It's a really good show, and I am not the only person who thinks so.
Are they cruelly eliminated at the end of every
episode?
Well,
here's the thing. It's really interesting. they found a way to handle that, which is that they eliminate in pairs. So it's never one kid going home. So it's not just you on the lonely walk out of the thing.
the tearful walk of shame.
It's not the episode that's all about you losing.
Is there a catchphrase when they're eliminated? Like, out of here, pipsqueak?
No. I don't think so. I don't think so.
All right, then I'm out.
Take your my first knives set and go home.
Anyway, so MasterChef Junior and Songza and Nice People on the Internet, these things are making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Steven at IDislikeSteven, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Kat at KatChow, K-A-T-C-H-O-W. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our absent pal, Trey Graham, at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow our producer, Lauren Migaki, at L Migaki, M-I-G-A-K-I. You can follow our esteemed producer, emeritus, and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. There are lots of other NPR podcasts we think you would enjoy. For word games, puzzles, and trivia of all sorts, check out Ask Me Another. It's a rambunctious hour that blends brain teasers with comedy and music. Find Ask Me Another on iTunes under podcasts.